President Obama's chief campaign strategist, David Axelrod, joins us to tell us why, even after years of enduring bitter partisan fighting and bickering, he is still a political idealist. It's To the Best of Our Knowledge from Wisconsin Public Radio and PRI, Public Radio International. As we gear up for the new campaign season, we've been thinking about what it takes to elect a president. So we asked one of the modern campaign masters, David Axelrod. It was his social media strategy that swept Barack Obama into office in 2008. And Axelrod was in town recently, stopped by our studio to talk about the art of the presidential campaign. Steve Paulson wondered, which is more fun, being president or running for president?
Running is fun. And I remember when we began the campaign in 2007, and one of the first things that Senator Obama said to us was, this ought to be fun. He said, you know, this is a deadly, serious pursuit. We're trying to change the world here. But that should be fun. It should be exhilarating. We should have a good time. And we did.
I want to come back to something that you just said about how exhilarating running a campaign
is.
I mean, you've written about how it's not just exhilarating, it's addictive. And to the point where the addiction becomes a little dangerous.
Yeah, I think so. It was one of the reasons why I resolved before the 2012 campaign that it would be my last, because every one of them takes something out of you. One of the things I wrote about in my book was the sacrifices my family had to make.
You were never around.
Because I was never around. You always rationalize it because it's the ultimate existential rush, right? You're headed toward this finite deadline. You either win or you lose. And you can justify almost anything in pursuit of that goal.
Let's talk a little bit about that first campaign for president, a historic campaign. A number of things that are very memorable. One was the slogan, Yes, We Can.
Yes.
Which you came up with.
I did. It actually, that slogan was first employed in the campaign for the Senate in 2004, which was the first campaign on which I actually worked with him. You know, I really loved it because our campaign was about involving large numbers of people in the movement for change. We wanted them to feel that it was about all of us and not just about Barack Obama. And we wanted them to feel optimistic that that we could change things. And so the first time we ever used the line was in the first commercial I ever did for him. And I will always remember this. He read the script through the first time, and it cataloged all these improbable things that he was able to accomplish in his life, barriers he overcame. And he said, now they say we can't change Washington. I'm Barack Obama, and I approve this message to say, yes, we can. And he got to the end of the ad, and he said, yes, we can. Is that too corny? And my heart stopped, and I'm making the case for why it's not. And Michelle was sitting on the steps watching him film his first ad. And he turned to her and he said, Mish, what do you think? And she just kind of slowly shook her head and said, not corny.
Now, another thing about the 2008 campaign is your campaign mastered new media in a way that had never really been done before. I mean, you somehow managed to target very specific groups of voters. And what was the breakthrough there for you?
Well, first of all, had it not been for social media and the technology that was emerging at that time, Barack Obama could not have run for president. You know, when we met to discuss the possibility of his running for president in 2006, late 2006, there were only eight people in the room, and that was the entire Obama for America organization nationwide. And two of them were Barack and Michelle, so technically there were six of us. But what we had was a faith that there were people who shared his sensibilities about the need for change, who would respond through social media, and that we could reach them through social media. We had seen—
Talking Facebook in particular?
We're talking about email. We're talking about Facebook. We're talking about meetups. I should point out that in 2012, we knew going into 2012 that what we had done in 2008 was almost prehistoric, the way all of this technology churns. And
So that was a totally different campaign by 2012?
The real addition in 2012 that made a huge difference was the addition of analytics and big data. We hired 54 young analytic geeks who were in this windowless part of the campaign headquarters staring at their computer screens, but they did extraordinary things in terms of helping us identify, particularly in the battleground states, we developed profiles of 36 million voters and made suppositions as to who was certainly going to be for us, who was almost certainly going to be against us, and who the marginal voters were.
You're talking about specific people.
Specific people, yes.
Wow.
So that gave us an enormous advantage in terms of how we targeted our resources. And we also created mobile tools for people who are out in the field so they could know, don't knock on that door. That guy's never going to be for us. But this is a possibility, and these people really care about the environment, so be prepared. You know,
So don't just go knocking on every door. That's old school.
Right. I mean, you know, the thing is that in a campaign, there's always going to be a group of people who are against you, and there's always going to be a group of people who will be with you through thick and thin. And the art of winning campaigns, particularly in these battleground states, is getting to those marginal voters and trying to persuade them.
Let me follow up on the 2012 campaign. Mm-hmm. The first debate with Mitt Romney, which was a disaster for Obama. I mean, he got trounced there.
I think that's generally understood.
What happened?
What happened was what we feared might happen, because it was common to every incumbent president. Bill Clinton escaped it in 96, but basically every incumbent president has had a bad to disastrous first debate. And I think there are reasons for it. President hasn't debated in 4 years. The opponent generally has come through a primary and is in battle trim. President is not used to having someone 4 feet away from them.
Who's basically your peer in that situation.
Exactly. And most presidents don't like to be poked and prodded and challenged in the way that you get challenged in debates. And so, you know, we went through debate preps starting months in advance, and they were uneven, to say the least. So we were, the night before the first debate in Denver, we had a really rough run-through. And I actually had a really rough conversation with the president after the run-through, in which he said, I thought that was pretty solid. And I told him the truth, and he was very unhappy about that. It was probably the sharpest exchange we've ever had. But it was sharp because I think he knew the truth, which was he wasn't particularly emotionally and prepared for this debate.
So you went into the first debate kind of thinking he wasn't going to do well.
Oh, I think we all had real sense of foreboding. And it didn't help that when David Plouffe and I went into the locker room before the debate, because it was in an arena, the president said, let's just get this over with. Now, understand, in 2008, this was a guy who, before the first debate with John McCain, I said, how do you feel? He said, just give me the ball. And now he was saying, let's just get this over with. These are not the words you want to hear from your candidate going into a major debate. It was a nightmare. And, you know, I had to go into that spin room where all the reporters hang out afterwards and try and spin the unspinnable and say why it wasn't a disaster. And I've never been so happy to walk out of a building as I was that building that night.
So what changed then by the second debate where Obama did quite well?
It took him a while to grasp how bad that debate was. But once he did, he totally owned it and said, I'm going to do better. And he...
Because he came across that first one as kind of standoffish,
right,
and like he wasn't willing
to engage.
Well, here's
the thing. So we had a bad run through again 36 hours before the second debate, and we were really in a state of panic. And we met with the president the next morning, just a few of us. It was kind of an intervention. And he was very candid. He said, look, you know, I was trained as a lawyer. I tend to treat these things like contests of fact and so on. And I know it's not, you know.
It's a performance.
It's a performance. But he doesn't like the performance elements of it. He thinks it's artificial. He thinks it's demeaning. But once we had that discussion, he came back into the prep. You know, he did everything that he needed to do. And when we were leaving, he said to Plouffe me. He actually called us in. He said, I just want you guys to know I think we prepared well for this one. And we're going to have a good night.
So you felt pretty good going
into that one. He did. He did. And after the first 5 minutes, we knew. Because here's the thing, when you're preparing someone for a debate, if you're well prepared, if the candidate's well prepared, you're never surprised. You hear a question comes up, you know how the candidate's going to handle that question. If you don't know how the candidate's going to handle that question, you probably haven't prepared well. So everybody breathed a sigh of relief after like the first 5 minutes, whereas in the first debate, after the first 5 minutes, we were all under our desks.
Mm. Now, one of the things that's kind of off-putting for a lot of people, a lot of Americans, is these presidential campaigns go on forever. I mean, at least 2 years, you know, really longer, as opposed to, say, in the UK. It's
right.
a matter of weeks
right.
to the, elect a prime minister.
Yes.
Do we need such a long
well,
campaign?
The reason that these campaigns are so long has everything to do with money. They are so costly now that in order to raise the money that you need, you have to start years in advance.
Is that bad for us, though?
Well, I think the money is bad for us. That's without question. And I think the length of the process is bad because now we have basically wall-to-wall elections with a few weeks of governing wedged between them. But the one virtue of the long campaign is that it is more than ever a gauntlet. You do find out who people are. I said in 2011 before that campaign that presidential campaigns are like MRIs for the soul, that whoever you are, by the end of it, people know.
So in other words, you have to be made of tough stuff to
you do,
to,
and
to
you,
withstand
and I, but
this.
And I don't think you can hide who you are. I mean, whoever you are, people get a sense of it by the end of them.
Hmm. I have a personal question for you. My 19-year-old daughter absolutely loves the old TV show West Wing.
Yes.
She's seen it many times, the
yes.
whole thing.
It's interesting because, you know, I run this Institute of Politics at the University uh-huh. of Chicago, and those kids have West Wing nights.
Oh, really?
And they go watch. We actually brought in some of the writers and stars of the West Wing to talk to them about the show.
Huh. So her dream is she would love to be able to work with those kinds of people, you know, with that president in that show,
yeah.
the political operatives there. And my fatherly advice is, that world doesn't exist. That's fiction.
Well,
you know,
look,
I mean, yeah, of course, there are idealists, but, you know, it's like given the grind of politics, the compromises, it doesn't seem like that exists. Am I too cynical?
Yeah, I think you are too cynical. And I think it's important that we not send that message because Congress is going to meet with you or without you. They're going to make decisions that impact every equity that you care about, whether it's human rights or cost of education or war and peace. And you don't want to leave those decisions to others. You want to try and influence those decisions
and be decision makers. I mean, someone's going to take those roles. But the question is, does idealism kind of go out the window?
You know, I worked in a White House in which I saw a president make a number of decisions that were as unpopular as they were necessary, who thought about the long run, sometimes at a short-term political risk to himself. And I actually had my idealism redeemed through that experience. So I don't think it's necessarily so that you have to be a cynic to survive. The only thing I'd say about the West Wing is, you know, nobody is as smart and quick and witty as Aaron Sorkin's characters. I mean, I worked with some really smart people in the White House, but it wasn't like we were in a constant state of witty repartee. So that part of it is probably more fiction than fact.
I'm a living sunset, lightning in my bones. It pushed me to the edge, but my will is stone. 'Cause I believe in a better way.
David Axelrod, talking with Steve Paulson. Axelrod was the chief strategist for Barack Obama's presidential campaigns. Today, he runs the Institute of Politics at the University of Chicago, and he's the author of a memoir called Believer, My 40 Years in Politics.